change the definition, we're doing it through the back door. Let me first of all say, I understand why you want this out quickly and you don't want it changed, but it seems to me what the committee is doing is trying to figure out ways to improve it with some issues that they have some concern about. Go ahead, Representative Peasley.
Well, the other alternative would be to reference in Section 3 under Sub 2, where we have identifying all reasonable cost-effective measures, just put language that in determining the reasonableness of measures, shall consider potential risk to indoor air quality and cost of operation and maintenance.
I'd be much more comfortable with that.
That put it under the reasonable sections.
I think the impact would be the same.
I think it would too. I'm not sure I quite share the thing that you have to keep definitions that are in rule always in statute, but if we can accomplish the same thing that meet the concern of Representative Wehade, Representative Agron's, and do it in a way, in this way, maybe that's the way.
Okay. We're not in a work session, but go ahead and we'll come back to this in a minute. Representative Parkinson.
Yeah, a question to Mr. Barrett. We've kind of skirted around the issue, but why is time of the essence, and what particular buildings and construction? And what specific buildings or construction program are we talking about? Time is of the essence.
At this point, there are several. Representative Parkinson, we haven't developed any particular list of buildings that we are, you know, going to work on. Probably what we'll do is identify a priority list of buildings from the governor's budget that look like they're going to, you know, have legs and might potentially be funded, and try to work with Ways and Means on those to fund the incremental cost of the energy efficiency measures. Our focus will be on high visibility buildings that people in the local communities will read about as the process goes through, and what we're trying to do is create a transformation of the market in the private sector, and we want to use the state as an example. And the best way for the state to be an example is when people see it, when it's visible, and people know about it. There are some buildings in the 89-91 biennium budget that are prime candidates that way. The state office building in Portland would have to be our number one priority there, because of its visibility, to try to achieve that.
You're talking about the new state office building?
Yes.
Since I presume that that's going to be in my district, I would like to have it meet the best standards that are available.
Representative Parkinson, Chair Representative Parkinson, our major concern is to give you, the decision makers of the state, the option of which of those buildings, if any. We're in a building boom over the next couple of bienniums. This legislature will probably allocate several hundreds of millions of dollars for new buildings. The option should be there. If this is going to be state policy and we're moving forward in a building phase, Ways and Means should have the option of using this as state policy. That's our
Mr. Chair.
Representative Park.
I suspect in the Senate there is substantial a lot of discussion about whether this bill would have an effect on the new prison construction. And it was decided it would not on any of it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Parkinson, that's where the transformation language comes in. If any of the legislature in this biennium does not appropriate funds for additional energy conservation measures in those buildings, then they would be exempt from this.
Representative Parkinson, normally we're talking about one of the features here, making people comfortable in buildings, and I assume in reference to the prison, they didn't have that in mind.
Right. One other thing, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead.
It sounds like it's going to cost 0.2% to do something. Maybe we could take that out of the park, 1% for the arts.
Mr. Chairman, is he trying to achieve consensus on this bill, Mr. Chairman?
That we have. I don't think he had that in mind at the moment.
I'd like to go back and ask about this change from 25,000 down to 10,000 square feet. Can you give me an idea how many buildings are now included that would not otherwise be included that exist right now that might be renovated in the future?
The way that the change from 25,000 to 10,000 square feet actually occurs in two places. It occurs in the policy statement, section one of this bill. So what it says is that it used to be that it was only the policy statement only applied to major buildings over 25,000 square feet. Now we're saying that all buildings that the state builds should incorporate cost-effective measures. The main substantive effect of that change is twofold. When a building is over the 10,000 square feet, the building authorized state agency is required to do the energy consumption analysis on it. And the other part of it is that ODO is then involved in the process and reviews the designs and reviews the inputs to that energy consumption analysis. But the standard itself applies to all buildings. It's just the only substantive effect there is which buildings will be reviewed with a greater degree of certainty. How many buildings are over 10,000 square feet in the governor's budget? I'm not sure. I haven't. There are probably 500 line items in the next six biennium there. We didn't go through and try to break that out. It's basically any building that's over about $1 million is probably going to be over 10,000 square feet.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Jones.
Can we do this without this bill? Mike?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, no, because what this bill adds is a requirement that prior to designing a new building, the state agency and the Department of Energy get together and develop energy criteria that the building's architect engineer will then evaluate. That's what's different, that all buildings over that size have to go through that process.
We could do this today, though, if, in fact, the Department of Energy wanted to be a player or asked to. There's anything prohibiting this today. This is
right.
Requiring it to be done.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Have you been a consultant in terms of your department on buildings up to today?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, most of our emphasis has been on existing buildings. And this, as higher education and general services have been, I think, done outstanding work. They've had some major renovations that have been done incorporating energy efficiency that has really cut their operating costs. And new construction, at least for our agency, hasn't been that much a priority. It's been a new field. We're getting more expertise in it. As we see this bill as the timing is good. We're in a period of there is going to be a lot of new construction, and this is a way to sort of regularize the process but make it flexible and reasonable.
Okay, one final question.
Yes, go ahead.
Why is the Solar Energy Association particularly interested in this issue?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, I obviously skipped over the first part of my testimony a little bit too fast. We are a 10-year-old statewide nonprofit organization. We are do education and advocacy promoting energy conservation in general, sustainable energy future. My organization has matured in the last 10 years as our understanding of our energy problems has. We do work on solar energy. We've done a lot of work on solar access and different kinds of issues like that. But we also understand that to achieve a sustainable energy future, we've got to work on a lot of other issues besides solar. And so we've focused our efforts in the last few years primarily on promoting energy efficiency and promoting energy resource planning. We were the major advocates of the least cost planning process at the Public Utility Commission.
Then is your name not today as evident of your mission as it was at the time that you formed the group?
I think that's safe to say, but we like to look at solar energy as something of a metaphor. It's really the epitome of what we can do to create a sustainable energy future, and if that's what we're working for, that's fine. I can tell you it comes up at almost every one of my board meetings that we change the name of the organization.
It's time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure that your membership is not just those who provide solar energy resources or available resources in terms of solar energy anymore, is it?
The members are primarily, they're energy professionals in a wide range of fields and utilities, architects, and a number of interested consumers.
let me ask now, we want to move on. Is this the testimony or anything more we need to add before it?
Mr. Chairman, just one point. I wanted to mention that the points the members have raised regarding clarifications and amendments, I'd have no problem with.
Okay.
No objection to them.
Mr. Massel, did you have other testimony?
Just about the same thing that Mike said.
Fine.
Here's one other point. We had some discussions with Eugene Water and Electric Board about the issue of the cost effectiveness definition and how it should be reflected in the working definition should reflect the difference in rates between utilities. So I would recommend that since we are going to be going through the process, that we also amend Section 3, Subsection 3, Subsection A, where it talks about coming up with a usable method for determining what's cost effective, and add a sentence that would say that the method will reflect the energy costs of the utility or utilities serving the facility.
Serving this.
Yes, Representative Parkinson.
Mr. Barrett, I'm going from memory now, but it's, as I remember, isn't avoided costs a big player in the definition of cost effective?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, yes, it is.
It looks like there'd be a conflict between the cost for it and one particular energy supplier. If they're getting cheap energy versus the avoided cost, isn't there a conflict there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, I'd like to address that because we did talk about that quite a bit. The distinction we're trying to make is between what I think what you're referring to would be a regional avoided cost or avoided cost to a utility system versus an individual customer. In this case, that customer is a state agency. And when we operate, for example, our loan programs, our business tax credit programs, and when the utilities offer their residential weatherization programs, they're dealing with the cost to that consumer and in determining what energy conservation measures are cost effective. And we need the flexibility to be able to determine what's cost effective in Eugene to the University of Oregon will be different from what's cost effective to Eastern Oregon State College in LeGrand because of the difference in their local utilities. And I read the statute as being sufficiently flexible to give us that flexibility, but this language would clarify that further.
Okay. Since we have no other testimony on this issue, let me close the hearing on Senate Bill 1060 and open the work session on Senate Bill 1060. Representative Kiesling, you had a...
Yes, let me... Representative Wehage and I are working out some language here, and I think we have it. I think the appropriate place for it would be on page 2, line 36, which
references any facility, to put a sentence, to add a sentence, such analysis shall include...
Such analysis.
Shall include consideration of indoor air quality issues and operation and maintenance costs.
All right, that pretty well, I think, reflects what we were talking about earlier, that you're defining or modifying reasonable to make sure that that is included. Everyone get the amendment. Mm-hmm. Page 2, line 36, a new sentence would be added. Such analysis shall include consideration of indoor air quality issues and operation and maintenance costs. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, the analysis is not referred to in that subsection 1 that precedes line 36. I think a more appropriate place for the...
But the state agency must determine that the design incorporates reasonable measures and analysis. Maybe it should be such determination shall include. Would that be clear? such determination, rather than such analysis, have
such
determination.
Okay, right.
Right, that's a good point.
All right. Anything else on that then? Anyone have any objection to that amendment?
Nope.
Okay, we'll go with that. And then let's take the look at the second one that you raised, Mike and Phil, and let's see if we can make sure we've got what you're proposing, the language reflects it. This is on page 3, line 9, parent A. You're suggesting that the method, usable method here, will reflect the energy cost of the utility or utilities serving the facility. Was that the language?
Yes, sir. Is that a new subsection? Or is
no,
that
that's part of
an added.
That's an add. It's an added sentence on, under parent A.
In line 10 before the
yes.
colon, semicolon.
Anyone have any...
Mr. Chairman, could you read that
read
again slowly?
Set, the method will reflect the energy cost of the utility or utilities serving the facility, which would clearly make which would make clear that you're talking about differences from one area of the state to the other. Any objection to that sentence?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hostetler.
I'm still back on this question, though, that if we're talking about it, and I guess they've debated it a lot, but I still don't understand why if the electrical costs in Eugene, for instance, are so much lower, it means that you would build in less conservation in Eugene because it wouldn't be as cost-effective than you would build in a place where the electrical rates are higher if we adopt this language that was just mentioned here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hostica, that could be because if the identical measure could be have substantially longer payback in Eugene than in Portland.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
And then go on, though, that as Representative Parkinson pointed out, if the essence of cost-effective analysis is avoided cost, I don't see how that applies if the utilities that service Eugene and service LeGrand have similar avoided costs at this point.
Let me ask, before you answer that, Mike, let me ask you, you'd indicated earlier you thought you had adequate authority to do what you're talking about here anyway, don't you?
Well, I think so, Mr. Chairman. And in most of the state, that distinction isn't a problem, but because in most cases the avoided cost is similar. But we do have a few situations, and Eugene is one, I think Minnville is one, some of the PUDs are similar, where the economics would be significantly different than it is in the rest of the state. And I guess it's a question, a policy question of what costs you want to impose on that agency that's constructing a new building in terms of energy efficiency. Typically, we would treat this the way we treat any homeowner or tax credit or loan coming in on an energy conservation measure. What's cost effective to that consumer?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I guess I'd just suggest the cheapest way for the state to lower its energy costs to build all its buildings in Eugene.
Well, we've done that for years in Marion County. Maybe yeah.
Except for the prisons where energy cost is not an issue.
Well, I think here it's a question whether we add that sentence or just simply don't leave it out and don't add anything. And you all think it would help. Is that the understanding? Well, you made it. You made the proposal.
Yes, I think it would help to have it.
Right. Any objection to it? Not, we will accept it. Do I have a motion to send the bill out as amended?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Weehan.
There was one other amendment.
Okay, go ahead.
On page 3, line 16. Continuing with that sentence, cost to the facility.
Yes.
All right.
And I wanted to add a phrase as follows, and must be included in the cost analysis required under ORS 276. 0.915 sub 2.
All right. This is in reference to the earlier suggestion that the 2% be included. So the sentence will read, "and must be included in the cost analysis required." What was the rest of it?
Under shall be
included. Cost analysis required
included
under
ORS 276.915.
Nine one five.
I don't know if it's appropriate to reference the same section that you're in. Do you just say?
Well, let me suggest this to you. I am anxious to move on. I think clearly we understand what you're doing. We will ask legislative council to make sure we got these technically correct, but you're making reference to this 0.2%, are you not?
That's right.
Okay. Any objection to that? We will include it then. And we will get the appropriate language. We'll have then a motion to send Senate Bill 1060 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Chair.
Representative Wehage.
I move that Dan Gross, Senate Bill 1060 as amended, be moved to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, it's been moved to send the 1060, Senate Bill 1060 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any further comments or questions? If not, Sandy, if you were, or Stacy, if you'll call the roll.
Vice Chair Parkinson.
Aye.
Representative Pickard.
Aye.
Representative Wehage.
Aye.
Representative Agrons.
Aye.
Representative Dix.
Aye.
Representative Hostica.
Aye.
Representative Jones.
Aye.
Representative Kiesling.
Aye.
Chair Cease.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 1060, and thank all four of you. We will then open the hearing on Senate Bill 576. Isn't it 576? Go ahead. Same customer.
Mr. Chair, still Tom Nobe, Solar Energy Association. Phil Barrett. Senate Bill 576 is a bill which would require the State Department of Energy in its biennial energy plan to take into account Oregon's contribution to the issue of global warming. This has become a very important issue, and it's tough to open a newspaper or to watch the evening news these days without hearing about global warming. This bill essentially says that Oregon should look at, as part of our energy planning, our impact on global warming. Phil will give a little bit more of a breakdown on it. Just want to let you know that in addition to the Solar Energy Association, the bill is supported by OSPERD, Ted Halleck, and Norma Paulus, Oregon's members to the Northwest Power Planning Council and Citizens for Better Transit, and also comes to you from the Senate with a vote of 27-1.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
all of us, I'm sure, have heard a lot about global warming ever since last June when Jim Hansen from NASA gave testimony to Congress expressing his alarm with the apparent rise of temperatures globally that he was predicting from his computer models of global climate. Ironically, Jim Hansen is the same person whose testimony was the subject of considerable discussion the last few days as the Office of Management and Budget made some changes to some testimony he was going to give to Senator Albert Gore's committee. In the last 9 months, obviously, we've been bombarded with information about global warming, and I won't try to go through a lot of the details about that issue with you. Despite all the attention to the subject that we've seen, there's no indication, I think it's very significant that there is no indication that our concern about the subject is not warranted. The urgency of the problem, I think, is growing daily as we get more information. Every new piece of scientific evidence that I have seen coming out raises my level of concern about it. Trying to deal with global warming is not going to be a simple thing. Fossil fuels are a major source, probably the principal source of greenhouse gases. Fossil fuels are ubiquitous in the global economy. Trying to cut down on the use of fossil fuels, considering our reliance on them in the economy, is going to be a tremendously daunting challenge. When we put together Senate Bill 576, we didn't propose that the state embark on very ambitious, comprehensive kinds of changes, unilateral changes within the state to try to reduce our contributions of greenhouse gases. What we proposed was, we think, the appropriate response for right now, which is to take some time, get a handle on the problem, and start doing some planning on the question. That's why we have proposed that we amend the Department of Energy's statutory requirements to prepare a biennial energy plan to expand the requirements of that plan to include a section that will present a strategy on reducing greenhouse gas emissions related to the consumption of energy in Oregon.
Okay.
Problems?
Comments? Mike, did you have anything on that too?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Mike Graney from Department of Energy. We also support the bill. It reinforces the work that the governor's task force on global warming is doing. We have a task force that Nancy Rockwell from my office is chairing that involves the Natural Resource Agencies and a number of others that has issued a draft report. And I guess we view the directive that would be in 576 as an ongoing responsibility as we get additional information from that task force and other sources to update our energy plan and reevaluate what strategies either Oregon could undertake or could try to influence the federal government or other states to undertake. And it's certainly an important problem, and it's one that the task is one that would not be something that we couldn't handle with existing staff, existing resources, just as part of our energy plan responsibilities anyway.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hostica.
I just have one question about the way this is phrased. It says the strategy for reducing emissions that contribute to global warming and that are associated with the production, distribution, use of fossil fuels to meet energy needs. We've heard a lot about various other activities that release gases into the atmosphere that are carried on in the state of Oregon. Are those outside of your area of concern, or you just don't want to get mixed up in that kind of debate?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hostica, my organization obviously focuses on energy, and so we weren't particularly interested in taking on all the problems, all the other environmental-related problems. We recognize that energy is not the sole source of greenhouse gases, and that the other issues need to be dealt with. Energy is, however, the principal source of greenhouse gas energy-related issues are the principal source one way or another, including of CFCs and methane, not only to CO2.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I guess the part of it, supposing you had a sawmill that's burning its own waste to power the sawmill, does that fall under this?
In my...
Not a fossil fuel, necessarily.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hostica, no, it's not a fossil fuel, and therefore it would not fall under this.
But it emits greenhouse gas.
It does not actually, in reality, produce a net contribution to carbon dioxide in the atmosphere if we assume that the land is replanted, that it came off of, because the net balance in the atmosphere, the release of CO2 will be balanced by that CO2 being brought back out of the atmosphere as the trees grow on the land that had been logged.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to complicate the bill, but I think that it is moving in the right direction. I just hope that they take as an expansive view of this issue as possible.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Parkinson.
Same paragraph, next sentence. My question is, how can a strategy reduce emissions? Can a strategy reduce emissions? I wouldn't think it could. Is that good English?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I'd like to address that as well as Representative Hostica's questions, because I think they're interrelated. Yes, we view this as, you know, as a direction for us to study this issue. And I view the global warming question is broad, and our task force does. Certainly fossil fuels are a major player, but they may not be the only player or the only principal player, and our knowledge of this is still pretty small. And by that I mean not just the state, but nationwide and internationally. The 20% target, for example, that's in subsection E is one that I think it was the Montreal conference suggested a couple of years ago as a target, and is a number that's being used in Congress for some bills on national legislation that's being considered. But we may find in 2 or 3 years that that's an inappropriate target or unrealistic, and I would view our obligation to be ongoing to report back to you if the target needs to be changed, if there are specific strategies that would help reduce emissions that require legislative action, or are things that could be done administratively, or things that would require congressional action. So I would view this as a very broad but important mandate.
I was out of the room for a moment. I don't know whether you discussed the relationship to nuclear energy here.
Mm-hmm. No.
There is obviously one in the reduction of the greenhouse gases, or whatever you called them, which would be virtually non-existent, I think, from a nuclear energy source. Are you suggesting that nuclear energy is more desirable than the burning of fossil fuels?
I don't think they were suggesting that, really. In fact, I don't know that we got into the topic.
Yes, I had a question along the same lines.
I asked, you know, you fellows obviously have discussed this. I wish, you know, they just share their knowledge with me.
Well, I'm wondering, let me get to them in a minute. Representative Ostiker raised an issue a little while ago. That's fine, Representative Agnew. Let's come back to that. I think if we look at page 2, line 4, item E, I'm wondering if we wouldn't get at this issue and avoid some of the questions you were raising, Representative Ostiker, by simply putting a period at the end of global warning.
Chairman, that would meet my concern. I don't know if the Department of Energy